You are listening to the Health Hack Podcast, powered by Lumen and hosted by myself, Caroline Pierce. As an athlete, sports scientist, and sports presenter, I am passionate about health and how we can unlock the skills to hack our full potential. Each episode, I'll be joined by a leader in the health and well-being world to learn how they've come to understand their body and turned that knowledge into power that could help you too. Today's guest is one of the most incredible women I know. She is a GP doctor. She is also an English television personality, familiar to many people on ITV's This Morning as the resident doctor, notably BBC's Trust Me, I'm a Doctor as well. She's recently a new mum and she's been one of the go-to voices during the pandemic for information and advice. She is Dr. Zoe Williams and someone I'm very happy to call a dear friend of mine. Zoe, thank you so much for joining us here on the Health Hack Podcast. How are you doing?
I'm really good. It's so lovely to see you. Always, Caroline. I always think with these podcasts, because Caroline and I are actually very, very good friends, it's kind of like that slight merge between like professional Dr. Zoe and the Zoe that you know very, very well that not many people get to see.
I know, but I want people to get a taste of both of those sides of Zoe, because, you know, we have known each other a long time. It's been over 10 years since we were both on consecutive series of the TV show Gladiator. Zoe was Amazon. I played Ice. Look, so much has happened since then, you know, with your journey into television and everything. But I want to take it back and get to understand, where did this passion of yours come from for living and promoting this healthy and active lifestyle that you're, you know, you spend so much time advocating across the nation?
I hear similar stories when I speak to my other medical colleagues who are really, you know, fanatical about how lifestyle is so important. It comes from my own personal experience and all the way back to childhood. I mean, I had really quite severe asthma as a child, severe enough to land me in hospital on multiple occasions. In fact, one time it was touch and go. It was pretty bad. And, you know, I grew up in quite a deprived area, single parent family, didn't have much confidence. And it was one of my huge inspirations, actually, to go into medicine. My paediatrician, Dr. Thistlethwaite was his name, couldn't say that at the time, who said to my mum, you know, he gave me a social prescription, what we call a social prescription. You know, he looked at my inhalers and gave lots of advice around hoovering and getting rid of any animal hair, that type of thing. But really importantly, he said to my mum, you know, it's incredibly important that Zoe lives healthily and gets into some form of sport or physical activity. It's going to do wonders for her managing her asthma. It's also going to help her with her confidence as well, because I was so clingy to my mum, like literally wouldn't let go of her. And that's what we did. I started dancing and I fell in love with that, was really passionately loved it, but I could only manage it for a couple of years. It got quite expensive. But by then, you know, this competitive side of me had developed and I wanted to play sport, and whatever opportunity I got to do, I did. But I think it also helped me academically, because I didn't want the boys to beat me in maths, and it kind of developed my personality. And I would say to this day, like a lot of my friends who really inspire me, and I think there is something about the people you spend time with that if they are doing incredible things, it inspires you, are mostly people who I've met through sport and physical activity. The girls that I've played rugby with at university, you know, you and Jenny and Amy, who I met doing Gladiators. So an active lifestyle has basically made me who I am today. I attribute so much of my success to going back to Dr. Thistlethwaite and his advice. So when I finally became a doctor in 2007, I knew I had to make sure that my patients at least understand that they have the opportunity to take their health to some extent into their own hands. And I really felt that it was an area that was lacking. We were taught much more about how to prescribe and treat illness rather than to educate and promote wellness. So it's something that, you know, I kind of made a pledge to myself that this would be something I would take on and try and encourage others to do the same.
And you have done so much great work there. And it's one of those questions where a lot of people, when we think about, you know, getting fit and getting healthy and dieting and exercise, people, it's very much that social media world and people are thinking about the aesthetic a lot of time. But as a doctor, you see that benefit to our longevity and our actual health beyond, you know, how it makes us look on the outside. You know, what would be the message to kind of like hammer that home a little bit to people that, yeah, it's great to look good, but it's more or just as much or more about what it's doing for our insides and, you know, preventing disease and all the rest of it.
Yeah, I think what we might see plastered in magazines or on billboards as a healthy body isn't necessarily a healthy body. You know, you can be in a plus size body and be very, very healthy. You can be in a thin body and be very healthy. You can be in a muscular body and be very healthy. You can also be in any one of those bodies and be very unhealthy,
yeah,
both physically and mentally. And you'll know, Caroline, coming from a world of elite sport, whilst athletes are physically some of the healthiest people you might know, there's often a lot of mental illness that can go alongside that. So when it comes to our all about health, the aesthetic is not congruent whatsoever in a lot of cases with somebody's health. And I do reiterate that I think we're quite obsessed with body size. And whilst, you know, for people who are above a healthy weight, losing some weight is likely to help your health improve, it's absolutely not the be all and end all. There are many things you can do to improve your health. So if you start with two people who are both, you know, let's say both just tipping over into that obese range, and one person loses a little bit of weight, but the other person stops smoking and drinks less alcohol and drinks more water and increases the nutritional value of their food and sleeps better and, you know, works on their relationships and gets some meditative practice and becomes less stressed, even though they haven't lost weight, they are definitely going to be healthier than the person that's only lost a bit of weight. So we do have this emphasis on weight because we can see it.
Yeah.
We can't necessarily, by looking, see how well somebody's sleeping. But yeah, so I think it's a message I often give to my patients who've been trying with weight loss for a very, very long time and struggling or yo-yoing, is just take the focus off the weight for a period and focus on eating more healthy, nutritious food or sleeping better or, you know, whatever's going to work for you. And often what you kind of see as a consequence, as a side effect of that, is if people are less stressed, sleeping better, eating better, moving more, they might just lose weight anyway without trying.
Well, that's it. You never hear people regret, you know, oh, I've eaten well, I've slept good. No one's ever regretting making those great decisions. And you're right, it's not just what we see on the outside. It's so important. And look, I think the reason people, you know, warm to you so much, and I've always felt this, is you're very real. There's a realness about you in the way, you know, when we see you on interviews this morning and you're in person, I'm sure your clients or patients as well, that you share a lot of your personal journey at the same time. And you've been very open about your fertility journey, your egg freezing prior to meeting your partner, Stuart, and then getting pregnant naturally, age 40, which for nowadays is considered old. I know we don't feel old, but in medical terms, considered old. And then ultimately delivering your baby by yourself with no pain medications. This woman is absolutely incredible.
That wasn't my choice. I didn't want to be
by myself. No, it wasn't my choice, but still pretty badass for doing it. Do you feel like people follow along on this journey with you and share if they're going through those similar things? And by you sharing your own story, it's helping other people at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the more I have, I guess, been brave at times and shared things about my past or about my present that I might feel uncomfortable sharing on such a public forum as Instagram or, you know, on This Morning, the TV show that I work on, the response that I've had has been incredible. And so many people have said that, you know, I've helped them by talking about, you know, I've talked about taking medication for anxiety in the past. And, you know, people see a doctor talking about mental health and that she takes medication, and straight away it normalizes it and gives them permission to go and seek the support that they need. So yeah, I've spoken about egg freezing at the age of 37 because I wasn't sure I was ever going to meet a partner. And you know, I've even spoken about my mum and her problems with alcohol addiction. And it really does, I think, encourages other people to open up and talk, because we know that with these sort of sensitive issues, one of the best therapies is talking about it and opening up. And the minute you do that, the number of people around you that share that they've been through something similar, and it just makes you feel so much better to feel that you're not going through this on your own in isolation. So yeah, and it's interesting because I was chatting about this to somebody recently. You know, as a doctor, it's a bit of a cliche, but when you go for your medical school interview, they always say, why do you want to be a doctor? And you always say, because I want to help people. And I genuinely think that we do, almost all of us do. But there are so many ways in which as a doctor I can help people. Like, you know, the typical way I see patients in a GP surgery, I work for the NHS, you know, I deliver education through various different channels, be it on TV, through a newspaper column, my social media channels. But actually, I do think that sometimes as a doctor, sharing some of these personal experiences that I've had has probably helped people in another way. And, you know, so it's kind of, I see that it's not a part of my role that I have to do or that most doctors will choose to do. But for me personally, you know, if that helps other people, then that's another reason. And it helps me as well, if I'm honest. Yeah. I was going to say that.
Yeah, I'm sure it's part of therapy for yourself as well. And you're getting to do it with the whole nation and with your role as a television doctor. What you say is helping so many more than just that single person that walks in your door. You're sharing that story with so many other people. And one of the stories that, you know, I think a lot of people gives both hope to and is great to hear is that, you know, getting pregnant at age 40 naturally as you did. And, you know, congratulations again on baby Lisbon Lion. He's absolutely gorgeous. Can't wait to see him again. How much do you think being healthy as you are and living the healthy and active lifestyle you have helped you to get pregnant at age 40? Or was there anything you specifically did while you were trying to put your body in a position to, you know, conceive naturally?
So the way I often explain a woman's fertility when we compare it to a man's is that you're born with all the eggs you're ever going to have, which is almost true. It's not quite true, but almost true.
Yeah.
So you're born with all the eggs you'll ever have. So you can almost imagine that your eggs are already in this factory and they're all perfectly polished. But every minute, every hour, you lose eggs all the time throughout your entire life. And at some point you're going to run out. So it's like there's a train swooping through this factory and eventually you run out and that's when you have menopause. Now, you can't change, you can't prolong your fertility. There's nothing you can do to make those eggs last longer. But if you live a life that is unhealthy, stress, you know, eating toxic foods, smoking, drinking too much, then you can speed up the train. There's nothing you can do to slow down the train. So that's the way to think about it. If you've lived, if you've been perfect, which nobody is, and I'm certainly not, as Caroline well knows, far from it, in fact. If you're perfect, you know, that train will continue at the pace it was set when you were born. But if you, the more you party hard and enjoy your life, you know, find the right balance, you might speed up that train. So genetics are the mainstay of it. So your fertility is largely due to your genetics. But living a healthy life is a good thing to do because you, you know, you keep your fertility as long as it possibly can be. So I guess for me, mostly, I think I was lucky that my fertility lasted until I was 40. Yeah.
But I think where the strength of your body came into play was when you had to deliver your baby pretty much on your own with Stuart and your doula next to you because the midwives were not able to get there in time. That's where, you know, you probably appreciated that you've got this strong body that you I know you've spoke to me about how you put trust in that your body could do that job. But even more fascinating to me was that when I first met Lisbon Lion and, you know, he was only a couple of months old, you were in the kitchen with a cup of tea in one hand, Lisbon in the other, and you're doing squats. And I was like, so let's talk about this sort of transition in your fitness and how your training has evolved now since becoming a mum. You were doing your squats and you said, this is my way to get my butt back after being pregnant. I thought it was fantastic.
I think becoming a parent, one of the biggest words of advice I would give to, well, two bits of advice I would give to anybody who's due to become a parent for the first time. First one is expect the worst of everything, hope for the best. Because if you expect the worst of everything, you know, you're prepared for the worst, and you know, some things might be not great and other things will be better. But the other thing is about reframing, because there, if you allow yourself to go to a negative place about all the stuff that happens after you have a baby, it can be really, really dark. So Stuart and I worked really hard to laugh about everything and reframe it. So when Lisbon was crying, sometimes the only thing that would settle him is if I held on to him and did deep squats quite quickly. And I'd sometimes do that for ages. I don't know how many I did. But also in pregnancy, you do tend to lose your butt. So sometimes I'd be exhausted in the middle of the night squatting. And I felt like I could cry. I think, you know, my baby is doing this to help me get my butt back and try and make it into a positive.
I love it. It was just fantastic. What's your training look like since? Because probably a lot of mums out there, you know, postpartum thinking, well, you know, I want to get back to training and the gym. And obviously there's specific advice you need to follow for postpartum training. But, you know, once you have young children, for example, and you're more time limited, sleep poor, all those things, how do you found is the best way to get those workouts and that extra activity into your life?
For me, the best way is if I can do it with him, because trying to carve out time to train on my own is practically impossible. I am a member of a gym and they do have a creche. So I used the creche a few times and that was fantastic. But if I'm honest, I haven't actually made it there for the past month because we went on holiday and then with working and being a mum, I just haven't made it there. So I find stuff that I can do with him. There's something called Carry Fit, where it's classes designed for mums where you have the baby in a carrier. Because honestly, when that baby, you think, well, the baby sleeps. When that baby's asleep, you're like, right, do I have a shower, eat some food, clean up? You know, wipe up that coffee.
You've got to choose what you get done.
You've got to prioritize. And it's really difficult to prioritize exercise. So, you know, going for a walk with them. The other day we went to baby cinema for the first time ever. I wish I'd been going since the beginning. It was amazing. And where I live, there's a massive hill and it's a 20-minute walk. So, you know, trying to, if you're pushing a pram and a baby and you've got a steep hill in there, it's a pretty good workout and it's still low impact. So even if you're quite early on after having the baby, you're not bouncing and jigging, so you can do it. So yeah, I would say just try and incorporate something every day that includes the baby, or using the baby as a weight. Like we play, one of his favourite little songs is the Grand Old Duke of York. So we go, oh, the Grand Old Duke of York, he had 10,000 men, he marched them up to the top of the hill and marched them down again. And we must do that.
There's your shoulder press right there.
20 times a day, and that's it. That's the shoulder presses and a little throw at the end. So, you know, thinking about, you know, what, and he loves that as well. That's our playtime. Yeah. I think the main way to get your exercise in as a new mum is either doing sort of structured exercise with the baby or just trying to build activity into the things that you enjoy doing together.
Yeah. I mean, I think as our stages of life change from having a baby to getting older, changes and adaptations happen in the way that we work out, the way we eat, the way we live our life. And one thing that changes is our metabolism. And this podcast is sponsored by Lumen. And Lumen is a handheld device that enables you to measure your metabolism, whether you're in a fat burning or a carbohydrate burning state. And it creates a program for you to help you achieve that metabolic flexibility. And as a sports scientist myself, I find it fascinating because one size doesn't fit all. You know, what we did when we were 20 might not work in our 30s, 40s, 50s, and so on. And I know you've had a chance to use the device as well. And, you know, if you have that science mind, and I want to ask you, you know, what can we do, in your opinion, to speed up our metabolism, to either stop it slowing as we get older or just help us to burn more fat and put us in that fat burning zone?
You're absolutely right in saying that we're all different, and what will work for one person biologically might not work so well for another, but also in the context of life, you know, what is realistic for one person might not be for another. So I think when there are various approaches when it comes to maintaining as fast a metabolism as possible. You could focus on exercise, you could focus on nutrition. Generally, the advice is around good lifestyle, so eating well, sleeping well, moving well. But some of the specifics I would recommend, and particularly this comes up for women who are around the age where they're getting into towards menopause or they're perimenopausal, and they know that one of the consequences of menopause is that almost definite a big drop in your metabolism. They often say to me, what form of exercise is best for me to do? The message around exercise, it's always whatever you think you can do, whatever you can fit in and whatever you can be consistent with. But if you were to choose one thing, it would be muscle strengthening exercise. We start to lose muscle mass from as early as 30. And as our muscle mass declined, there is a natural decline in our metabolism just associated with that. Metabolism declines for a number of reasons, but the more muscle you have in the body, the more energy you're using without even using that muscle, because it uses a lot of muscle just to maintain it. And then there are lots of things in nutrition. You often hear about, you know, having caffeine and green tea and ginger and spicy food. And whilst all those things have been shown to give a little boost to your metabolism, it's a little boost. So, you know, you can't expect to have huge results, but if you're somebody who really enjoys spicy food, then eat it more often. As long as you don't get any side effects, it's not going to do you any harm. And, you know, drinking cold water, that's another one that's often been spoken about. But I think the main dietary one would be thinking about trying to eat quite a high protein diet.
So it's about holding on to your muscle mass, really. You know, when you talk about strength training and talk about a high protein diet, so our metabolism slowing, hormones in one way, but because we're losing the muscle mass. is the, sort of takeaway message there.
Also because your hormones are changing as well. So even growth hormone declines as we get older. And also like a bit like the eggs in the factory, your metabolism, the process as we get older just gets less efficient, so slows down. So sadly, age is something we cannot avoid, but it does impact our metabolism. And it's, you know, for women, I spoke about menopause, even taking that out, it's a gradual decline from mid-20s for men and women.
No, it's so interesting. And something I wanted to pick your brains on as well, you know, I know you've been a sort of a voice of information during the pandemic, and there's a strong link as well between exercise and our immune system and helping to keep our body healthy in that way. What's the link there, and how can exercise help us keep our immunity high and avoid us either getting sick or the consequences of being very seriously ill when we get sick?
Exercise in relation to immunity can impact in both ways. So if you are somebody who is doing very little exercise, you'll benefit from increasing it. But if you're an elite athlete, particularly a marathon runner, then actually extreme amounts of exercise can negatively impact your immune system. But the vast majority of us, if we're doing less than that government recommendation of 150 minutes of moderate intensity per week, then we would benefit from increasing our exercise levels. And it comes down to that same thing again. Our immune system is very, very complex. It requires lots of different nutrients, you know, vitamin D. We've been hearing a lot lately about how vitamin D can impact our immune system, healthy fats in our diet as well, but also exercise. If we're exercising, we are driving the chemical reaction, so to speak, that helps support our immune system to be healthy. And something in particular in relation to metabolism and immune system is mitochondria. Mitochondria are the little battery packs in our cells.
I remember from my biology lessons.
They were always my favourite organelle. But if we're looking after our mitochondria and through regularly moving and not being sedentary, which is different to exercise, and not spending many hours sitting, we keep our mitochondria healthy, which keep our cells healthy, which help our immune system and prevent early cell death. And early cell death is early aging, so we don't want to have that.
No, absolutely not. So if I was just to give like a, you know, what a sort of quick fire answer from you on, let's start with three ways people can add more activity to their day. What would be Dr. Zoe's top three ways to add more activity to our day?
The first one is have a think about what you do already, because you do probably more than you think. Bear in mind, everything counts. Walking up and down stairs, hoovering, playing with children. So number one, you're already doing more than you think. Number two, remember that small doses of activity count. So if you don't have time to go to the gym, try and just think about little ways you can build small amounts in, doing some squats whilst the kettle's boiling, walking to wherever rather than jumping in the car if it's a short distance. And the third one is just not being sedentary. So if you work in an office, if you can stand for 3 hours a day, over the course of a year, you burn as many additional calories as if you ran 10 marathons in that year. So little things done often make a big difference.
Wow. So it's those small things that accumulate that we think we've got to go to the gym and beast a big session, but we're surprising how much we can accumulate in our day to day. I love that. And then three nutrition eating changes that people could make to, you know, get their insides healthier.
First one would be positive mindset. So when you're thinking about being healthier nutritionally, if the thing you're trying to do makes you feel sad, like, you know, eat less chocolate, drink less wine, don't focus on those things. Focus on the things that make you feel positive, like, oh, you know, eating more leafy green veg. Oh, that makes me feel good about myself. Or drinking more water, or things that make you feel, when you say you're going to do it, you feel good, not sad. So focus on the positive. So that's a positive mindset. The second one would be about gut bacteria and gut health, gut microbiome. So supporting your gut microbiome. And one of the best ways to do that is increasing the diversity of plant foods that we eat. So we should be aiming for at least 30 different types of plant each week, which sounds like a lot.
But that's a lot,
Right, think of a handful of mixed nuts. If you've got six different nuts in there, that's six. If you have a tin of mixed beans in a curry or a soup, that's probably another six. So thinking about how you can diversify, or even when you're buying tomatoes, if you buy a punnet of mixed tomatoes, rather than, even though they're all tomatoes, they're three different species, so therefore they count as three different plants. So, looking after your gut microbiome. And the other one, nutrition, would probably protein, focus on protein. We spoke a little bit about how that can support your metabolism, also help support if you're working out, you need the building blocks for muscle, and also keeps you fuller for longer. So if people are trying to lose weight or maintain their weight, if you're having lots of protein, it makes it easier to do that.
Oh, I love that. You know, they weren't the standard answers that people give, like eat this, eat that. You know, they're really nice things to think about and it's very doable for a lot of people. And lastly, I can't let you go without addressing the mind as well, because we've talked about nutrition, we've talked about exercise, and I'm sure in your job, as much as you're treating physical conditions, people, and you mentioned it in that last answer as well, we have to feel good. We have to be in that right mindset to execute all these changes, or you know, subtle changes that are going to help us to live a healthier lifestyle, you know, health hacks, if you like. So firstly, I have two parts to this question. Firstly, what's the biggest limiting factor or barrier that you find people have to living a healthier lifestyle? And two, how can we get ourselves in that positive state to do all these good things?
I think one of the biggest barriers is the all or nothing attitude, is setting our expectations of ourselves too high, making it unachievable. So, you know, aiming to lose a huge amount of weight in a short space of time, or stop drinking for 2 months. And, you know, by day three, you've had a glass of wine, you've failed, so you give up. So I think making it achievable, and this is definitely something that I utilize myself. So during my pregnancy, it was in the middle of the pandemic, we were locked down, and I came up with three things that were non-negotiable for me to feel good. And one of them was 10 minutes of movement every day. It didn't have to be exercise, it could be stretching, yoga, it could be going for a walk, going for a run. And what I normally found is, because it was 10 minutes, I felt that was achievable. And once I was 10 minutes in, I'd keep going and do more. But as long as I've done the 10 minutes, I've hit my goal. Another one was around drinking water, and another one was around meditation. Still trying to, 10 minutes of meditation a day, I found that really, really challenging.
Longer than 10 minutes of walking, hey?
Yeah. So just make it achievable, because small changes make a big difference if you can stick to them. It's better to have something very small that you stick to forever than a huge, big shift, but it only lasts a month.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Dr. Zoe, I could talk to you for hours, and luckily I get to do so, but I'm so happy you've been able to share more with our listeners. And just lastly, you know, what have you got, what projects, what's going on, and where can people find and follow you?
What have I got going on? I don't know. I feel that perhaps for the first time in my life, I'm not aiming to go somewhere or do something, or I'm quite happy to plateau where I am. You know, work's good. I've got Lisbon. I want to, you know, give my family some time. So no big ambitions, which is unusual for me to say, but I think that in itself for me is a real win, because I think people
Absolutely.
Like me and you.
You are the busiest woman I know.
But people like us, we're always looking for, you know, how can I top what I've done? How can I improve and get better? And people can find me on Instagram at Dr. Zoe Williams.
Please go and give Zoe a follow. Loads of incredible information, and your journey and your story in itself is wonderful to watch. Thank you so much once again, and look forward to seeing you soon, Zoe.
Thank you. Great to chat with you, Kaz.
And thank you for listening to the Health Hack Podcast with myself, Caroline Pierce. Each episode provides a healthy dose of health hacking, so make sure to hit subscribe or follow so you don't miss out. I would be truly grateful if you could rate and review wherever you're listening to help others seeking inspiring stories and health hacks to find us. The Health Hack is an Insanity Podcast production and powered by Lumen. See you next time.